Thank you. Experiences, like many life-changing moments in your life, it's hard to really be fully prepared. It's hard to really understand what you need to do, what you need to be aware of in order to take full advantage of those moments. And a lot of the value and the meaning that you, and in the end you receive, often it only gets appreciated or even understood in retrospect. And being that you're still here, you came back, you're ready to, you know, you're already feet wet in Chorev Zman. There's still a whole year ahead of you, Eliu, to really seize this opportunity. And maybe there are a few ideas, pointers that I could share with you that could help shed some light on different things that maybe we forget or that aren't necessarily a priority. Both things that I found to be extremely valuable to my experience and things that maybe I wish I had placed more importance in when I was here. I want to start with a special story that has stayed with me a long time. Heard it from the very person it happened to. A man who's a tremendous hidden tzaddik. He's doing unbelievable kirov efforts in the city that he lives in Toronto. Someone who I had the privilege of working with for several years, summers. He said he's older than I. He said back when he was in yeshiva, so he was a good kid, grew up in yeshiva high school, from family, did everything the right way, but found his experience in yeshiva, not because of the yeshiva, but just this period of time in his life to be extremely difficult. He didn't feel like he had a strong direction. He felt like he was doing the motions, never really had any good questions answered in his life, even if he was, again, playing the part. And he decided, I'm here on my own for the year. I could pretty much do what I want if I think about it. And he decided to take a Shabbos off. And when I mean off, I mean like he canceled Shabbos. And what he did is he put a tie-dye shirt on and jeans and sandals, and he brought a backpack, and he went to the beach. And that was how he spent Shabbos. He just needed to work stuff out. And it was his way, maybe, of protesting, again, doing living the routine. And it was also, in a way, a kind of a clean break, and maybe to restart, and maybe something will click the right way after making that clean break. And it's Friday afternoon, he gets to the beach, sits there, him and his backpack, in 24 hours, no one knows where he is, no one knows when he's there, who he is. And he's kind of a little happy that he's gotten away from things. Again, he told me this story himself. And around an hour into it, sun's already basically set, Shabbos is starting, he's sitting there and he feels a tap on his shoulder. And he assumes that it was nobody, maybe someone brushed by him, because literally no one in the world knew that that's where he was, so how could anyone know it was him? But he felt the tap again, and he turned around, and it was a Jew, a guy in a beard and a black hat. And he said, "Good Shabbos, Rabbi Yid. You have a place, you know, to be this weekend? Do you need anything?" He's like, no, I'm really okay. He's like, "What do you mean you're really okay? Like, do you have somewhere to go? Are you gonna eat somewhere tonight?" He's like, no, I'm just gonna be by myself. And this guy's like, "You mean you're gonna be by yourself right here?" He's like, "Yeah." He's like, "No, you're not. You're coming with me." He's like, no, I really, honestly, on purpose, want to be right here without you and without anyone. Like, that's why I'm here." And he said, "No, not taking no for an answer. You're coming with me for Shabbos meal. It's going to be amazing." Now, this is the point where you have to realize that this Jew, whether or not he was affiliated with Chabad is not important, saw this kid who obviously looked like he was not a Sabbath observer, perhaps was never a Sabbath observer, and this was the perfect guy to invite over to his home. Now, the person inside the t-shirt and jeans was a fully observant Jew who grew up in a frum community and knows all 613 mitzvahs, but that guy didn't know that. And that guy says, you're coming with me right now. It's going to be amazing. I can't wait. You're going to spend the Shabbos meal with me. It'll be so special. It'll be so holy." Now, again, this is exactly the thing this guy didn't want to do. But he found himself being pulled off of the beach into this guy's house. And as he was making his way off of his plans for Shabbos, he realized that he was placed in a very unique opportunity. He was a person who, according to his host, knew nothing about Judaism. And therefore, all questions were considered appropriate questions. Asking why we wash our hands twice on one hand and twice on the other before we eat bread was an appropriate question in that context, whereas in a firm home, asking that question is kind of silly. Of course, you have to wash your hands before a challah. What's the problem? Well, you don't know why. You don't know what's the... Just do it. Whatever. That's what we do. And he suddenly realized he had a tremendous opportunity here. And every single step of the Shabbos meal, he said, "Why are you doing that? Why are you even dressed like that? Why are we eating such special food today? Why the seventh day? Is God really listening?" Every question that he maybe felt pressured not to ask, or felt a certain, like he was in part of a culture where some questions you just don't ask as easily, everything was on the table. And he said this Shabbos, where he was planning on making a clean break and ridding himself of all questions, was the Shabbos where he found the voice inside of him that was able to ask all of these questions. Now, what's interesting about Shana Bet is, on the outside, you kind of look like, at least your life decisions, you like kind of figured it out, right? Like, I have direction. I know Shana Bet, for many people, is kind of like, even when you're in Shana Aleph, you know that's what's happening, but the decision to be here means you kind of sought out a certain path for yourself. But you and I both know that doesn't mean you have questions answered, even the simple ones. And of course, the not so simple ones as well. And this is a chance to do some research. It's a chance to look honestly at who you are and what you know and what you don't know, and try and figure that stuff out. And I would strongly suggest, as a thing number one that I wish I was told, figure out your questions. Don't be ashamed of what questions you have. Get answers. You're in a place where there are probably more people per square foot in a Beis Medrash that not only know great answers, but would love to discuss them with you. For a fact. That would be my first piece of advice. And what's important about that tip is not simply to ask questions, but to remember that in order to ask questions, you have to be bothered. You have to purposely be bothered by stuff. And you can't ignore that feeling when you're bothered. You have to cultivate that feeling in a positive way. To say, I'm bothered by why we do something a certain way, why it doesn't make sense to me, and it will bother me enough to ask or to open a few books or to get lost in a question and try and find an answer as if I care and not as if I need to know it for the test, right? That dreaded line that we so cared about for 4 straight years. Is this going to be on the test? Right? Which basically says, I would rather not know any of this. Now you want to know. There's a whole holiday dedicated to this very idea. A holiday where we are encouraged to ask questions and we are not told the answers. Do you know why we dip karpas in salt water? So that we'll ask, why do we dip karpas in salt water? Do you know what the answer is? So that we'll ask, why do we dip karpas in salt water? What's the answer? So that we'll ask, why do we dip? Do you understand what I'm saying? It's a really cool thing until you realize if you're the kid that asks, and then the father's like, very good, my son. Let's move on. Wait, I don't get it. Why did we just do that? No, exactly. There's plenty of this stuff tonight. We're going to do weird stuff that no one knows the answer to. We're going to do, sons are going to ask questions. We're going to have weird answers that don't answer the question. We're going to get you on a chair, ask 4 questions, and then just move on. It'll be great. And this is the holiday that celebrates our faith in God, right? But maybe we're supposed to be programmed to ask questions and continue to ask questions and be bothered and be comfortable being bothered. I imagine Avram didn't have answers to every question. But his koach, which is, by the way, Pesach was the Yom Tov of Avram, his koach was that he was bothered when no one else seemed to wonder, how did this all get here? The koach of Avram was that he was bothered enough to find the answer, or everyone else got distracted and started bowing down to their lamp. Like, that seems a bit easier on my head, right? So that's tip number one. Tip number two is about Yitzchak Avinu. Yitzchak Avinu gets exactly one parsha, this week's Parsha, and it's way past his prime. He's blind, and the story is really about his kids, and he happens to be a supporting actor. He would not be considered a lead actor if this was being nominated for any sort of... Right? Last week's Parsha actually has more to do with him than this week's Parsha, but the whole story is about his future wife and the guy who went to find him while he was sitting and sitting, right? That was the story about him. He missed it. The first story about him was the whole test of Avram, where he just walked along and then almost died. We don't hear a lot about that. So this is the Parsha about him. And all throughout Yitzchak's story, it's never about him. He digs wells. They're the wells of his father. Avram goes through a name change because he has this transformative process. Yaakov goes through a name change because he has this transformative process in his life. Yitzchak is Yitzchak. Do you know why he was named Yitzchak? Because other people, not Yitzchak, laughed when they heard that Yitzchak was going to be born. Yitzchak is about anyone but Yitzchak. And yet, you have a sense that Yitzchak is the most real person in the room at all times. He's 100% legit. The Medrash talks about how there are various different ways that they arrive at this teaching about how Avram had a form of kiruv, which we're more familiar with, where he would bring guests in, he would give them food, he would make sure they benched afterwards, he would talk to them about God, it would be like this house of love and prayer. And it seems to work very well. He has v'anefesh asher su b'charan. But the Medrash says that Yitzchak, and Yaakov by the way, but Yitzchak also had his form of kiruv. But his form of kiruv wasn't, I go out, I find the people on the streets, and I bring them in. It was, I'm going to be real. And the people who are looking for something real, when they find me, they're going to understand immediately what real is. And they won't be able to turn the other way and live their life differently. They're going to see real, and that's it. You can't go back. That's why he didn't leave Eretz Yisrael. Avram went all over the place. Yitzchak stayed where he was, and people came to him. Word got out. You want to go experience something real? Go to Yitzchak's house. Shana Aleph. Chas v'shalom to belittle the tremendous Avodas Hashem that is taking place in Hashanah Aleph. Chas v'shalom. But it's really hard to separate it from the tiny little show that kind of goes on. The times where we look to see whose wardrobe is changing and in what way, who's leaving second, third, fourth, last, earliest, latest, a night seder, who clocked the 5 minute Shemona Esrei. Those things, it's hard to separate the real from the not real because it's such a raw process for everyone, and it's really hard to keep it from being a public experience. No one's at fault for that, it's just that is what it is. In fact, we were taught this, because 4 years of high school, the whole point of high school, socially speaking, is to try and fake as much as you can the person that you are to be the person that you want to make sure everyone thinks you are. That is the goal of high school. The success story of high school, someone who's successfully convinced everyone around them that they are a certain person when they are not that person, right? Let's be clear, that's what it's about. That's called winning. That's how you win high school. We're all trying to be something. It's definitely not us, but it's something. And we get here, and there's perhaps part of Shana Aleph is that undoing process of trying to remember that the show doesn't really get us anywhere. And then you get to Shana Bet. And Shana Bet is where the world kind of looks at you and assumes, if you're doing this, it's because you actually want to be doing this. If you're doing this, it's because you genuinely care about Avodas Hashem being an integral part of your life, about Koveya Itim in a meaningful way, about actually internalizing knowledge, about remembering sugyas, not just learning for the sake of learning, right? About growing as a person. This is a conscious choice, and it's because I actually care on the inside. And that's why I'm here. I wouldn't be here after a year of this if I didn't actually genuinely care more than simply sending the message to others that this is the type of person I want them to think I am, right? So what's interesting about Shana Bet is that whether you like it or not, you have to be real. This is you. You'll feel it if it's not real. It will be obvious to you. The show goes away. And in that sense, we could all learn a little from Yitzchak, who does most of his damage between the lines. It's not written down in the pasuk. Where the realness of Yitzchak has nothing to do with what other people are seeing. No one knows how late he stays in the base manager. No one knows where he wore a striped shirt or a hooded sweatshirt or a cardigan or any of the other stuff. It's not written down. No one will know. Don't look around, everyone. That wasn't the point. Thank you. I tried to balance it out of the check.
Yeah, it's very
good. Slash, I didn't change for work. But, so I like to tell people who talk to me about, who ask me advice about, you know, my year in Israel, Shana, whatever. I say, you'll learn three siddurim. It'll be amazing. You'll grow. You'll go to Vadim. You'll have tons of RC Cola and stale Bisley and stuff like that. Or even fresh. But there's going to be these times. There's going to be these times. For me, it was the 10 minutes before I went to bed. Although I must admit that this was before iPhones existed. So we had a little bit of an advantage. I'm also dating myself. But it was the 10 minutes before bed where I got to think about myself, where I got to honestly try and internalize who I was, what I cared about, what mattered to me, and no one was watching, no one could have known what I was thinking, and it was those moments that I felt like I was growing into somebody, and it was literally digesting the experiences and the learning and the thoughts that went through my head over the course of the day. And it was those moments that I held on to the closest after leaving yeshiva where I'm like, I did real critical thought of who I was. And this is building off of the first tip of asking questions, being bothered. Who am I? Right? What do I care about? So we all have a little to learn this year from Yitzchak to... I don't mean to run away from public environments. I don't mean to go to the opposite extreme and disappear. But I mean to remember that if there's something valuable going on here that extends beyond what happens in this zip code, it's what happens internally. It's what takes place on the inside.
I don't know either. You are my hero. He's also cooler than all of you. Yeah.
He's wearing a hoodie. He's wearing a hoodie.
What? So cool.
Tip number two. last tip that I want to share, the last idea, comes from the world of psychotherapy, as I was introduced as something that I do. That I meet with students, all in, young couples, all sorts of people that struggle with things, whether they are diagnosed or they are simply life problems. And there's something that I find myself saying over and over, and it actually has a lot to do with, again, the Inyane Diyoma of the life of Yaakov and Esav. I ask, and again, I've asked, I'm sure, more than one hand full of clients of mine. Consider the lives of Yaakov and Esav. One of them had his own huge posse, married a bunch of wives, got crazy rich, lived right near his family, enjoyed hunting and playing games. When he was hungry, he just found food and ate it. And he lived happily, for as far as we know, his entire life in the land that he wanted to live in, that he was king of. The other one had a brother who tried to murder him, so he had to run away from his family for 20 years to his uncle, who tried to trick him or murder him, depends on who you ask, who switched his wife for another chick and then had to work a bunch of years to get his actual wife, then had to work a bunch of years for seemingly unclear, 20 years. On his way out, met up with the guy who tried to murder him. Instead, he tried to join forces with him. Another bad idea. Finally gets back home. His daughter is raped, and his favorite son goes missing for 20 years. And the only way that all of that gets reconciled is when he leaves the country that his God promised him and his kids, which symbolized the beginning of a dark and terrible exile for his descendants. Now, which one was the one that God chose to be his guy? Which one of those two people?
That's a good idea.
If God is good, which one did he choose? Right? If you're taking door number one or door number two, I lived a life where I could just, like, rip a lamb chop off a lamb and eat it for dinner. And live with my wives in Edom. Like, that seems like a totally good lifestyle. The one where I'm running for my life, essentially a third of my lifetime, as my kids either get lost or hurt or become slaves. That one's the chosen one? That one's the God's like, no, that's my guy. I'm in. You're going to see. This is going to be great. Ride with me. So it seems that God wants us to struggle. He wants us to be frustrated. He wants the path to be constantly unclear. And he wants you to get to a point where if you find yourself extremely comfortable, you should be extremely worried that maybe you're not on the right side of this. That maybe God chose the other guy and not you. Because we don't seem to enjoy the life of comfort. We enjoy the life of frustration and struggle. And one of the biggest blessings of yeshiva is that at a certain point it becomes easy, it becomes second nature. It becomes what I do. This is I do what I do. It's great. And one of the hard things to do, when I actually learned this in Avad, Rav Yamer, is to figure out how to make this a struggle. And I don't mean how to make it hard for you, but how to make yourself uncomfortable. The way Rav Yamer explained it was, time and time again, the people that I saw, the yeshiva guys that I saw, who had a lasting path of growth out of yeshiva and onwards, as opposed to yeshiva, unfortunately, being the highest point in their Avodas Hashem and not the starting point, where the people that, when they were in yeshiva, made themselves uncomfortable in the sense that they took time out of their extra time. And when something wasn't clear to them, but the clock struck whatever, 11, they're out. But instead, they're like, no, I'm going to get this. Where they set up, they bothered a Rebbe a little more than what is typically asked, because they wanted an extra something out of this. The whole idea of Shunabed is that this is extra. I know it's not really that way anymore if you're here, but that's the way it was designed. That this is meant to be an extra step to go out of your way to do more. The challenge for you will be, how do I make sure that I feel that that's what this is? That this is much more. That the message I'm sending myself is, I'm working extra hard on this because this matters to me more than anything else. I'm not going to be successful in anything else if I don't get this right, if I don't start on the right path. And that's why I'm here this year. That's why I'm here in this month, the next 5 months, to put myself in the right path, to work a little extra hard, to be a little uncomfortable. So, to summarize, we have to be, it's kind of a dark little story that I painted, but we have to be bothered, we have to be alone, and we have to be frustrated. You ready? One of the things that Rav Turetsky didn't mention is that I work for a high-tech company in Tel Aviv. It's another thing that I kind of do. And it very interestingly opened my eyes to what it means to have a product and make it succeed and make it work. You can't fake it. To make something, to bring something to life. Yesh me'ayin. It's a very interesting, eye-opening thing if you look at it in the right perspective. And what it requires is you to care deeply about what you're doing. You to truly feel that what you're doing is going to make a positive impact, whether it's on your life or other people's lives. You have to be extremely committed to solving problems in order to remove, eliminate as many obstacles as you can to succeed. You have to learn from the process. An extremely important piece of it, you have to hear, what do people like about this? What don't they like? How do I address those needs? How do I learn from that? And you have to be in a mindset of constant improvement. I'm not here to finish the job now. I'm here to improve it and grow. And I think there's a perfect translation of that process to us as people. We are the product. We're our own startup. And our job is to build ourselves. Our job is to be passionate about who we want to be. Because if we're not passionate, if we don't really care, it's not going to get anywhere. We have to really care about who we want to be. We have to learn from mistakes, from what we're good at, what we're not good at, what we love to do. And make improvements upon that, both in the sense of fixing mistakes, fixing shortcomings, tikkun amidos, but also in the sense of pushing my strengths. What can I do with this? I seem to care a lot more. I like musar, I love musar. What can I do with musar? I love bikias, I love covering ground. That's just the starting point, that's just two examples. And you have to be in a mindset of constant improvement. I'm not here to finish the product of me. I'm here to learn and to improve. hopefully we'll continue the process of Shunabed, really our entire lives. There's a joke, there's a Rav in YU or one named Yitzchak Cohen, one of the professors of mine named Rav Gil Pearl, a principal of Kobas Kol Yeshiva in Philadelphia, used to say that there's one person here who's still in Shana Aleph, and it's Rav Yitzchak Cohen. I remember learning that. If you know, if you've ever seen Rav Yitzchak Cohen, if you know what I'm talking about, it'll make perfect sense to you. But there's a Rav who mamash looks like he just like heard the most unbelievable Musar Shmuz on Thursday night right after Chalin, and he's like, he's going. And he's in his 70s, I think. So there's a koach to be a Shana Aleph Jew where you're just on fire and you break stuff in Shmoneh Esrei, right? You're just out of control. Right? But there's a huge, more subtle, but perhaps more effective koach to remaining a Shana Bet Jew. To stay focused on the internal process, to make sure that you stay curious, bothered, frustrated, but in a positive way, determined to find truth, and to not make it about the show, to make it about you and your own product, so to speak, and to constantly push yourself out of your comfort zone, to keep pushing, to keep improving. We should be zocha to be in shun about the rest of our life. We learn the nigga?
Yeah. Thanks, sir. I recommend putting the lights on for a second. And maybe, good. We have food, which we'll bring out in a second also.
If there's anyone who knows what it means to never leave Shana Bet. If anything I said makes sense, it's you're looking at it. Thank you. Okay. Do you guys know what nigga I'm about this?
No.
Sure,
I don't remember if I did it last year. There's a niggin that was part of it was composed by a Rebbe. Part of it was composed by his Talmud.
Okay.
And it's somehow
sums up my entire life.
I've got it all. Sometimes it's brownie, sometimes it's shell.
Brownies in the show.
Okay, good.
That's not the song.
Oh, it totally is.
You did that and you took 100 of those.
You hit like 1 out of 10.
Okay. This is a very special thing to me. For various reasons. Tov. Diddy.